I'll introduce the panel that you have today. To my left is Justice Dana Womack. To my right is Justice Dabney Basil, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. I understand that all the parties are here and have checked in, so unless there are any questions or housekeeping matters we need to take up, I'll ask the clerk to call the case.
The court will now call Rhonda Draper et al. Versus City of Arlington, Texas et al. May it please the court, Mr. Byron Henry will argue for the appellant. Mr. Chad Arnett will argue for the appellant.
Thank you. Floor is yours, Mr. Henry.
May it please the court, the trial court in this case erred by denying the plaintiff's request for a temporary injunction based on undisputed facts in the record on three legal questions that both the court or this court is able to answer and reviews de novo. The first question is whether or not short-term rentals were prohibited or allowed in the city of Arlington prior to the enactment of the ordinances at issue in this case. The second question are the property rights enjoyed by those who own properties both inside and outside the zone or in the city of Arlington fundamental or vested? And lastly, are the distinctions between short-term rentals and long-term rentals drawn by the city on this record rational? I'd like to start with the first question because it seems to be the basis of a lot of the argument in the appellee's brief, and that is whether or not leasing your property as you see fit for any duration was allowed in the city of Arlington prior to the passage of these ordinances. First, I'd like to say that unlike a takings case, which this is not at this point, the reliance interests and the investment-based expectations prong that in the case law that runs where you don't buy a property somewhere where a court's already zoned it or set uses, that when you buy something and then you claim a takings for damage and get paid, there is an issue of whether or not you had a reasonable investment backed expectation if you purchase a property somewhere where something is banned.
So if I recall the cases correctly, in the Tiki Village case, that was one where, correct me if I'm wrong, except for one little part of that area, it had just been sort of tradition that people were using properties for STRs down there. They were neither banned nor expressly allowed until they started to be regulated. Is that right?
The record is they were doing it.
Unlike Zatari, where Austin had some sort of STR ordinance and then changed it?
No, and in Zatari, I think in the Zatari case, the city of Austin conceded that they were it was an allowed use prior to the ordinance. In this case, at least in their brief, the city of Arlington is contesting whether or not it was an allowed use prior to.
Well, what inferences should we can we draw, if any, from the fact that Arlington was, as I understand it, collecting hotel occupancy taxes from these people? And did they continue to do that? I noticed that in October of 2018, when the City Council approved the first reading of the ordinance saying it was affirming that STRs are currently a prohibited land use, did they continue to accept hotel taxes from some of these people after that point?
Yes, and Ms. Draper actually paid retroactive taxes, not only once she found out that it was required and that was you could register. And there's an argument in the appellee's brief that even income from illegal activities is taxable, and we learned that from the federal government, that they can get you for tax evasion even if the gains are illicit. The problem with that is not the same as the federal government registering drug dealers and telling them how to calculate the tax and then collecting it. It is after the fact when they find out you've been selling drugs, then they'll get you for tax evasion. In this case, it was active participation between the city and the STR operators with respect to charging and collecting the tax.
Is there anything in the record where the city of Arlington ever tried to enforce what it says is a prohibition on STRs against anybody else before the time that they enacted this ordinance?
No, and they don't make that argument here that anyone could be retroactively, if it's still within the statute of limitations, prosecuted or cited in any way for operating an STR. In fact, the ordinance had a discontinuance provision for those currently operating it, so it's odd to give someone who tries to get a permit and is denied a wind down, or doesn't meet the permit requirements by October, to give them a wind down time on a non-permitted use. And then, of course, we have the hotel tax issue, which is, the record also reflects that it was those at the city, at least in a couple instances, that told them there was no current prohibition and all you needed to do to qualify was to register with the city and pay the hotel occupancy tax.
Now, where does the AG stand on this case? I know they intervened in Zatari, and I think that service was the AG ever served in this case?
I'm not sure. I believe the AG is aware of this case, and I believe their views were made pretty clear on the law in the Zatari case in an amicus brief that we both cite and I think the court has access to. They actually go a little bit further than we do, I believe, in some of their analysis under the law. I think our arguments are a bit more modest, but in any event, we have a little bit different facts. But what I was getting at with regard to takings is there's some things the city can do without paying, or government can do to you and your property and your rights without paying you for them. We know what those are: general economic regulations. Some zoning falls into that category, which this isn't, and I'll explain that in a moment. Then there's some things the government can do to your property rights and economic interest that they have to pay for in your traditional reverse or inverse condemnation or takings cases. And then there's some they can't do. They can't offer to compensate us for taking away fundamental rights, whether it be free speech or assembly or religious freedom. Those things aren't things government can do at all. And in this case, under the due course of law provision, we believe the city of Arlington have stepped into that realm of fundamental rights that they are not allowed to regulate, period. So with respect to a takings claim, I just didn't want to get off on the whole reliance issue, because even if I bought a piece of property in Arlington today with the ordinance as they exist, that may pose a problem on reasonably investment-based expectations with respect to getting money from the city, since I knew I couldn't rent my property. But it doesn't save constitutional violations that violate due course of law, saying I can't lease my property as I see fit. The fact that I bought a piece of property with an ordinance, I can surely bring a free speech or a constitutional claim once I move to Arlington, if it's verboten, regardless of whether or not I seek money for it. And so while we think it's important for the court to know that the way this country works, and our Constitution is, we're free to do as we please with respect to our property unless the government says otherwise. And the idea that the government or the city of Arlington believes that they've bestowed on property owners their right to use their property, and if they're silent on it, such as there's nothing authorizing long-term rentals in the Arlington City Code. So I guess under Arlington's view of the world, you can't lease your property for more than 31 days.
Are you backing off? I mean, your brief places strong reliance on Tiki Island. Are you now thinking Tiki Island doesn't apply to the same extent you argued in your brief?
No, Tiki Island's important because regardless of whether or not you get to the investment-based expectations and the money damages or the injunction for takings case, all the analysis preceding that has to determine whether or not leasing one's property is a fundamental or vested right. Regardless of whether or not you apply that law to the facts, and our facts are different, the law is established in a very exhaustive way in both Tiki Island before they get into the facts and in Zatari before they get into facts as what the current law is. And so Tiki Island, it's interesting, Tiki Island, the person who owned the property there, Ms. Hill, where the temporary injunction was upheld, basically it was eerily similar in this case. No, we don't live on the coast. No, people don't, I guess, visit Arlington to the same extent they visit the coast to see palm trees in the ocean, which is, I guess, part of the argument for distinguishing that case. But the bottom line is that she confirmed with the city with respect to regulation. She owned it before the ordinance went into effect. She had leased it short term before the ordinance went into effect. She had been told about the hotel occupancy tax before the ordinance went into effect. So there was eerily similarities between that. But the real key of Tiki Island is the establishment that the right to lease property under the Texas Constitution is a vested fundamental right.
Well, okay, so Zatari uses the phrase settled right. Should we draw any conclusions from the fact that opinion drew some sort of distinction between vested rights and settled rights in the context of this issue, and what are the differences?
So they start their analysis on the law section with the ownership of property as a fundamental right, and with it all the things that are attendant to it in the bundle of sticks, which includes the right to lease, and they actually list it, and I think the case they cite is a Texas Supreme Court case from 1890 talking about the right to lease one's own property and property interests. So I don't know if what the line is for what's settled, vested, or fundamental with respect to property rights in Texas, but if it's not the right to alienate or lease your property, then I don't know what would qualify as a fundamental right with respect to property. And remember, that case is about fundamental property rights, not fundamental rights of privacy or other areas that the Supreme Court and other courts get into. So
but
we're talking
how far
about
do we stretch that principle? I mean, it's subject to a rule of reason. You can't take your residentially zoned property and sell it for a commercial use, can you?
No, and in fact, Tiki Island addressed that, and I think the quote from Chief Justice from the court in that case was, the issue here is not about property owners' right to use their property in a certain way. It's about owners of short-term rentals retaining their well-settled right to lease their property. So the argument was made citing a well-known case, the name slips my mind, but saying that you don't have a right to use your property in any certain way, and that's clearly the law in Texas. The question is whether or not the well-settled rights with respect to use, and that's not really a specific use, by the way, but a bundle of sticks with respect to the right to alienate your property, sell it, lease it, exclude others from it, are all fundamental to the ownership of property. And I think they make a good distinction in Zatari about whether or not a specific use, a case they distinguish with respect to someone who wanted to use their property to house a large number of cats, is not it's not the same as the right to lease your property with respect to the bundle of sticks, because a specific use is housing cats or conducting your business from your home, which are traditional distinctions that have been made for decades with respect to uses, commercial versus residential. In this respect, to even go more, delve a little deeper on your question, the Texas Supreme Court, and unfortunately this case is not cited in our brief, though it is in the Zatari opinion, the Tar v. Timberwalk Park Owners Association, which is at 556 Southwest 3rd, 274. It's a 2018 Texas Supreme Court case determining whether or not the term residential in a restrictive covenant covers short-term rentals. The argument there was made that it does not, that single-family residence implies some sort of residence like permanency, length of time, and the Supreme Court said, absent other factors leading us to that conclusion or no specific definition of single family or residential, the court found that short-term rentals are covered by the term residential. Now, this isn't a restrictive covenant case, but I will say the similarities are eerily similar in that there's no definition per se here of single family residential, and in fact they consider single family residential zoning to include leasing of property for more than 30 days. So you could have arguably 31 days, you could get 11 tenants in 1 year on a long-term rental under the City of Arlington's rationale, and that would be perfectly fine. It'd still be single-family residential, but if you leased it one time in an entire year to two people for 3 days, that's not fine. So that's another problem with some of the distinctions. But in any event, the Supreme Court has said that that's residential, and the Zatari opinion addressed it head-on and said this isn't a zoning issue between commercial or business and residential, because residential includes leased property. The city acknowledges that, at least they have to, or else they would have to acknowledge that someone that leases their property for more than 31 days is no longer residential, and they would also be violating the ordinance because they'd be using it for a commercial or business purpose. And it's clear that's allowed.
So what can a city do? I mean, here you've got Arlington saying, we undertook a study, we hired this outside consultant group, they questioned citizens, took the pulse of the city and all that, and we came up with what we thought was a targeted, reasonable response to what we were hearing were problems that people were having. I mean, you're not taking the position that a city can't do anything about short-term rentals, are you?
I'm saying that the city can't unilaterally ban some property owners from leasing their property as they see fit as a long and well-settled right to a vested right to the ownership of property in the City of Arlington as it's been used in the past through time, and those who come later. Certainly they do have some ability to regulate. If they're going to do it, it has to be rational, and it has to comport with the data, which in this case, they did have an open house where people put some dots and they had a bunch of hearings, but the result is what matters. It doesn't matter if you have one hearing, if they can't constitutionally do it, or you have 20 hearings. and lots of input. Either they can unilaterally take a right out of the bundle of sticks under the Texas Constitution for no good reason, and certainly it's briefed to the hilt, but all, I mean, you've got noise and sound and trash and parking, all areas that are already addressed, and Zatari talked about this, by city ordinances punishable by criminal penalties already. So there's no study saying that there's more frequent crime or frequent arrests or more trash or more noise at any of these short-term rentals. So if you're going to infringe a fundamental right, which we talk about in the Assembly Clause provision, which is patently unconstitutional on its face, then you have to meet strict scrutiny, just like you do for all the other fundamental rights under the Constitution, whether it be state or federal. And they didn't even come close. They barely even attempted it. They basically say, this is our police power. We can regulate land uses. It's like zoning. We can tell you what you can and can't do in your property. We can let you lease it for 30 days. We can say you can't lease it at all. I mean, that. I see my time has expired.
Well, let me ask you one question. You agree we apply a fairly deferential standard of review in this case, since we're reviewing a temporary injunction issue.
Not on issues of law, Your Honor. I mean, it's de novo. So, I mean, if there are disputed fact questions about what the city did, then there would be some deference on fact findings. But certainly,
and the question of reasonableness in the fact question in this case.
Well, I mean, they didn't attempt to. Well, if you find that it's a vested fundamental right to lease your property for any duration, then that's it. I mean, it doesn't matter. They didn't even attempt to meet strict scrutiny with respect to that provision, so that's a legal question. I mean, if it's not a fundamental right and it falls into middle tier or lower tier, where you're talking about rational basis, where you're weighing the factors, then your de novo review would go to equal protection, where you're talking about were the reasons they gave rational, and if there's any dispute, a fact finder could say, yeah, they were, then you probably would give deference. But on the legal question of can they do this, period, that's a legal call that
I understand that with respect to the right of assembly, but you're saying that a quasi-zoning determination, and I'm not binding you to that term, is subject to strict scrutiny?
I'm saying if you read all of the analysis in all of the cases, the exhaustive analysis, in order to irreparably burden a fundamental right, or excuse me, to burden a fundamental right, the government has to meet strict scrutiny. And in this case, if they make rational basis, we've explained why it's a problem. But no, there's some things the government can't do. So the question for the court is it a matter of degree here? Can they tell you can't sell your property but once every 2 years or 3 years? Can they take that right out of the bundle? And if they have that right and rational basis applies, then it's any conceivable reason to ban it. So they could just say you can no longer lease your property, period, under that theory. Okay. If they can do that, then I think that's a yes or no binary question at the front end that you're allowed to decide.
She's trying to stop both you and me.
So, thank you, Your Honor.
I would never do that, Justice Basil. But if you would add 2 minutes to Mr. Arnett's time, that would be lovely. Thank you. Mr. Arnett.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I would like to start out by addressing one of the first arguments my esteemed counsel made, and that is the issue of whether short-term rentals were prohibited in Arlington prior to the time the STR ordinances were adopted in April of 2019. In fact, they were. The Unified Development Code of Arlington, like many development codes, states that the development or use of property for any other use not specifically allowed herein is prohibited.
So why did the city accept these people's taxes?
Your Honor, the taxes were paid, according to the testimony, voluntarily by the plaintiff, most of them by going online and registering for hotel tax. That was not a decision made by a city official, which is the key inquiry on an estoppel-type argument like that with respect to the city. But with respect to the development code, residential use is defined. You may have heard mention of the Tar case. That was a deed covenant case. That's essentially a contract construction. The term residential use in that deed was not defined, and so the court adopted what I would consider a fairly expansive definition of that. The definition in the City of Arlington's Unified Development Code in section 12.3.1 says residential use is the occupancy of a dwelling unit by a household occupied by only one family. Clearly, STR rental use is not permitted and was not permitted. Now, to the next question about the taxes, Justice Kerr, let's look at the timing of what they are saying. Because what the timing reflects, if you look at the timing of the City Council meetings where there was public debate over this issue, all of that predated the time that the appellants registered to pay tax and even began operating as short-term rentals.
Well, taking the plaintiffs themselves out of this, when the city engaged that, I can't remember the name of the consultant group that gathered the data for the city, when were they hired?
Your Honor, I don't know the exact date that consulting group was hired. I may be able to find it for you. Well, I know that the deliberations about short-term rentals began in October of 2016.
Okay. So let's assume that it was somewhere around that time period. I noticed that the report that group put together said that there were, I think, close to 500 STRs that they located in Arlington. I mean, if you're saying that those were not permitted uses, I mean, did the city ever contemplate, is there anything in the record, filing an injunction against all these people and sort it out later and decide whether you wanted to allow it?
I'm not aware of anything in the record that indicates that, Your Honor. What happened is, obviously, at the beginning, the city does not know what it doesn't know. So if people are operating short-term rentals, the city doesn't necessarily know about it. At some point, with the proliferation of Airbnb and the online booking agencies, it became a known issue. Hence the reason the city began deliberating whether they should permit short-term rentals in Arlington for the first time, and if so, what regulations should attach.
But the city's position from the very beginning was, if we find one, we know that it's not permitted?
The city was contemplating whether to expressly allow STRs in the City of Arlington once it became aware of the issue. And it sought citizen input, third-party consultancies. There's lots of testimony in this record about the sort of fever pitch that was reached in the City of Arlington concerning short-term rentals, including problems with trash, noise, all the things we heard about. There's testimony of Kerry Garcia in the record, which is very salient to these issues. And all that kind of came to a head over time, but the city wanted to be very thoughtful about how it regulated short-term rentals. So it didn't do what some cities like Fort Worth have done, which is ban them altogether. It didn't do what the city of Grapevine did, as I understand it, which is ban them altogether. It didn't do what the city of Austin did, which was allow them, and then 4 years later, take it back. So what it did is it tried to find a balance, the best balance, between allowing short-term rentals in areas where it made sense, which in particular is the entertainment zone in Arlington, where the stadiums are and all that sort of stuff, while maintaining the sanctity of quiet residential neighborhoods. And it did that over time. It didn't rush to judgment. And although the record doesn't reflect it, presumably during the time that it's deliberating how to address this issue, I'm sure there were people operating STRs as a non-permitted use. But ultimately, the ordinances were put in place and they permitted STRs affirmatively for the first time.
So you obviously disagree with Justice Rose's sweeping statements in Zatari about the nature of being able to lease your property as some sort of vested or fundamental or settled right.
I absolutely do, Your Honor. Okay. I think the Zatari case overreaches in several respects, and I would point the court to the dissent in that case because I think it points out some significant flaws with that opinion.
Now, Judge Cosby's rehearing this issue next week, right?
He is.
Okay. I know y'all will keep us posted if anything changes about his decision.
We will do so, Your Honor.
Oh, and I was going to ask, does the city have a plea to the jurisdiction pending as well?
The city does not.
Okay.
Not at the present time. So I would like to go back to this idea that there is a vested property right, because whether we agree or disagree with Tiki Island or Zatari, The facts of those cases with respect to the vested or settled, as Your Honor pointed out, rights is so far different than this case, it's amazing. In Tiki Island, the record was undisputed that for 20 years, short-term rentals were allowed. It was undisputed that Ms. Hill, Angelia Hill, in that case, had operated her short-term rental for 7 years. 7 years, undisputed. Before she bought that short-term rental, she met with city officials, not a clerk in a tax office, city officials who assured her, this is allowed, go for it. Then 7 years later, they pass an ordinance that takes it away. The significance at the end of the day in that holding is not that the city can't take it away, but the suggestion by the court is that those plaintiffs who had that taken away from them, that was a settled use of their property, needed to have some chance to recoup their investment. That's ultimately what the end of the case says. Think about Zatari. The city of Austin said everyone in the city can operate short-term rentals. Let them do it for 4 years and then pulled the permits. And this case, none of the plaintiffs operated STRs before the city began publicly, very publicly. There were like 32 meetings, public meetings, if you include committee meetings and city council meetings, where this was openly discussed. They say they researched prior to buying, like Ms. Hill did, but they never looked at the minutes of the city council meetings, or they would have seen that this was being publicly and openly discussed. But they never pulled the most important document of all, the Unified Development Code, which clearly defines residential use as the occupancy of a dwelling by a household, by one single family, or they would have known it was prohibited. And
I'm just going to quibble with you on that. I mean, I'm not sure that people would know that necessarily. You might think, well, I can do a short-term rental to a family, for argument's sake. But
I understand, Your Honor. And I would respond to that by saying that I don't think a one-night rental of a property is a household. I understand your point. Factually, what the plaintiffs testified to is not really that they researched that STRs were permitted, but rather that they were looking for places they weren't banned. They were looking for a loophole, so to speak. Mr. Fenceroy testified to that, and he said that he was looking for, he said, some cities started banning, which is the main reason I was looking at county, state, et cetera, with respect to STRs, and he admitted that there were no authorizations in the UDC for this, but he thought, well, they haven't been publicly banned, even though they were banned in the development code, and he went ahead and invested. All of the appellants except one are real estate investors. Mr. Fenceroy owns one in Florida. They own several properties here. One of the appellants bought another STR after this lawsuit was filed within the zone, the STR zone where they're permitted. So they're investors, and that doesn't necessarily change the analysis, but it goes to the question of, should they have been able to read that code? Should they, did they understand what that meant? These are sophisticated people who should have known what it meant and could have consulted experts who do.
If we go with the legal holdings of Zatari about the vested right and about the right of assembly, you're going to lose?
I don't think so. Because we're not here on the merits. We're here on the review of a temporary injunction. There's extreme deference given to Judge Cosby, and his ruling should be upheld if there is any evidence in the record that from which he could reasonably conclude the plaintiffs could not show a probable right of recovery. The record is littered with support for this ordinance. Judge Cosby made the right decision. So I don't think you have to reach those ultimate decisions on the merits today. Now, ultimately, you may have to. And I will say that the Zatari case is dead wrong on the scope of the right to assemble in this state.
Before you get to that, let me ask you really quickly. I know that the plaintiffs have also touched on the irreparable injury aspect of temporary injunctions, and I didn't know that the city, didn't see that the city really had a lot of response to whether you think they could show, have shown, that they will suffer an irreparable injury.
I don't think the record supports that, Your Honor. Number one, there's no fundamental right at issue. We maintain that steadfastly. Secondly, they all testified that they can sell their homes now and make a profit. They can rent them long-term. They've recouped any investment they initially made, which is a pretty quick recoupment considering they've only owned them for 18 months or however long. So we don't think they can show that, but we don't think we even get there. We think it's so deferential, the standard here, that Judge Cosby's ruling must be upheld based on the record. We think we are right on every aspect of law, and I'm happy to address any of them you have concerns with.
Well, do you agree with Zatari that the right of assembly, a court should examine restrictions on that under strict scrutiny?
I do not. Zatari, the Austin provision dealing with what it defined as assembly was overbroad. I mean, you look at it, and there were aspects of it that didn't make a whole lot of sense. The court could have struck that down under a rational basis standard without having issued a sweeping ruling that, contrary to all federal and state authority before that time, said that the right to assemble was limited. I mean, the ruling is essentially that you have a right to meet with anybody at any time, anywhere, and that is a fundamental constitutional right. The U.S. Supreme Court has said there is no general right to socialize, not a fundamental right. There are Texas cases and Supreme Court cases, Supreme Court case being the Village of Belterre, and the Texas case being the Barr case, not tar, but bar, B-A-R-R, where the Texas court and the U.S. Supreme Court have held there is no fundamental right of association for unrelated adults to even live together. So if there's no fundamental right to live together, I am really hard-pressed to see how in this case there's a fundamental constitutional right to hang out in the front yard after 10 p.m. That's just a wrong decision. I think the Austin court went way too far. I do think there were features of that ordinance that did need to be addressed. We don't have those. Finally, there is clearly a distinction between short-term and long-term rentals, and this relates to the equal protection claim. In fact, if there wasn't a difference, I'm not sure why the appellants would even be here. They would just lease long-term. The record shows that there are unique problems that arise from the turnover that short-term rentals have, the parking problems that short-term rentals have, and other issues with trash and other things. And if I could direct your honors to any testimony, I would direct you to the testimony of Carrie Garcia. And her testimony is found in the reporter's record at 244, line 19, through 259, 16. She is a homeowner who lives across from an STR in Arlington. And I think you'll be astounded at her testimony, which also was given to the city council when they were deliberating how to regulate STRs. But it shows that while any house could have a parking issue, any neighbor could, there is a specific problem with that with STRs in Arlington, of too many cars, too much noise, too much traffic.
But there are already ordinances addressing those particular problems, aren't there?
Not in a way that gives the city any teeth for enforcement. Because what the city did when it passed the STR ordinance was it requires a permit, and you have to comply with all the permit requirements to keep your permit. So because those provisions are contained within the STR ordinance, if there's a violation of the noise ordinance provision or the trash or whatever, they can pull your permit. If it's in some other aspect of the city's code or ordinances, they don't have that ability. That's why it was specifically done that way. So we believe that short-term rentals and long-term rentals are not similarly situated. They're different. They create different problems. There are even insurance differences. There's testimony in the record that an ordinary homeowner's insurance policy will cover if you rent out your house for a year, you know, long-term, but they will not cover short-term rentals. You have to get specific insurance. You have there, as I mentioned, some of the other problems. And so there are differences, including tax differences. They're not similarly situated. I don't think they get off the ground on their equal protection claim. But even if they are similarly situated, everything the city has done based on the record was rationally related to a legitimate government purpose.
Does the LTR restriction have the same restrictions in it, such as number of occupants, vehicles, such as that, or is in the STR?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Does the LTR restriction have the same restrictions in it, like number of occupants, vehicles allowed, as the STR restriction has?
No, Your Honor. Not that I know of.
Does Arlington even have specific ordinances dealing with long-term rentals?
I know there are some. I can't profess to be fully up to speed on all of those, but I do know the city certainly distinguishes between long-term and short-term rentals. In fact, in the definition sections I read you earlier, it says for tenant occupations for more than 30 days, see the lodging section, essentially. It refers you to another section. So I know it's addressed. I do not purport to know all the ins and outs of that particular part
Thank
of the
you,
statute.
Thank you, Council. Rebuttal?
Oh,
sorry.
You.
Yeah,
thank you very
up.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Please, the court, a couple of issues. Angela Hill, before purchasing, she researched whether her property was restricted by deed restrictions or covenants. She bought it as an investment. She and her realtor gathered from their research there were no deed restrictions or homeowners association regulations burdening the property and began renting out her house short-term shortly after her purchase. That's what the record says in Tiki Island, not that she met with city officials and got their estoppel permission to regulate, to operate it.
Could a city official give estoppel permission?
The case law is pretty clear on estoppel issues. That might have something to do with reliance interest if you were in a takings type provision case and you're trying to get money from the city for allowing you to rely on something on reasonable investment backed expectations, but we don't have that here and we don't need estoppel. I want to focus on just the breadth and scope of council's argument. Basically, using the UDC, that means every city in this state that uses the UDC, including most of them in this county and Collin County, where I currently reside and practice most of my time, bans already not only short-term rentals, mind you, under that definition, but I think Justice Kerr hit the nail on the head. That definition does nothing to help their case because it talks about one household. The problem is that they obviously don't apply that to long-term rentals because that household can change month to month. You can have a different household every 30 days. So long-term rentals are banned if it's not the same family continuously, and we don't know for how long. How long? Is your point was right on point. What about roommates for college? Is every house in the city of Arlington being rented on a monthly basis to college students banned? Is it prohibited? The breadth of that argument in order to save a clumsily drafted ordinance is, to me, it's astounding. And the idea that the UDC definition helps any more than the definition the Supreme Court used in Tar, where they had traditional uses across the United States. They surveyed what was considered long and short term. Believe it or not, it didn't agree with the 30 days. The Supreme Court said the other side was saying 90 days is the standard. The Supreme Court still refused to accept that as the standard used by most cities and governing bodies. And I know that was in a restrictive covenant, but remember, they were trying to determine what single family resident meant for purpose of a restrictive covenant with no definition. That definition is no different than single family residence on UDC. I mean, it only asks the same question. What does that mean and for how long? So I don't think he really, Mr. Arnett, my friend on the other side, really means what he's arguing today, that all of those different uses in the city of Arlington that don't meet the one family requirement for however long, once again, there's no duration. That's the key, what the Supreme Court has said and other courts have said. The durational requirement, without something specific, it's assumed you can lease your property and there's no limit on duration. whether it's 30 days or 120 days. There's a few other problems. I'll let Chief Justice Rose's analysis speak for itself with respect to assembly. I'll just also make one point here. If I own a house and I live in it and use it as an STR, that's the same family, my household, they still ban it. All the regulations apply if I'm living there. Two of the plaintiffs live in their house while they rent it, by the way. They make no distinction on that method. My assembly rights, even when no one's renting my house, I can't be outside with the rest of my family if it's more than two, because occupants is plural. Two occupants can't be outside after 10 o'clock. So even if no one's at my house that's lodging there, I can't assemble. It's blanket. If I'm registered as an STR, all the ordinances apply to me as a homeowner if I'm living there, even when there's no lodgers living there. They make a point of that in their definitions that say an occupant is not a tenant. An occupant is anyone staying in the STR at any time. So I think that's another absurd overbreadth of this provision that means it can't really mean what they say.
Let me ask you sort of a practical question, assuming that you're hearing next week and Judge Cosby rules the same way he's done before, so it's up to us at the end of the day. If we say that there should be a temporary injunction, what exactly will your clients be allowed to do?
I would say that they would be those outside the zone would be allowed to continue to use their property as an STR, for sure. And those inside the zone, we've got the assembly provision, I think, should be DOA for everybody. I mean, that can't apply, but it only applies to those, I guess, that don't get a permit. I think the permit, and we have other claims pending, so the case wouldn't end, but on the banning of STRs outside the zone and the assembly provision, which is all that's at issue before you today, those would have to be on hold. And I don't know that anything's going to change that would require that the trial on the merits is going to change anything on those two provisions. There's a couple other claims pending that it might, Your Honor. So we'd ask the court to reverse the trial court's decision on these matters of law and render a decision entering a temporary injunction as requested. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all very much. This has been a very helpful oral argument. Appreciate your time this afternoon. Your case is submitted, and you're free to go.